Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Brian Hughes. This week, Nancy and Jason from the WILK Morning News speak with Pittston author Charles Buffalino about his new book, Reflections of a Mafia Family, The Teamsters, and the Final Resting Place of Jimmy Hoffa. I'll be speaking with Marie Onakevich from NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Health, about National Mental Health Month during the month of May. Froggy 101's Doc and Chewy speak with Wilkes-Barre Mayor George Brown about upcoming events in the Diamond City. I'll be back to speak with Taryn Talaka from the Wyoming Free Library about their Beer for Books fundraiser coming up on May 29th. And I'll close with Margot Azzarelli. She'll speak about her adaption of the Edgar Allan Poe play Fall of the House of Usher, playing this and next weekend at Actors Circle in Scranton. Special Edition gets started right now.
We are talking with Charles Buffalino, author of the new book, Revelations of a Mafia Family, The Teamsters, and the Final Resting Place of Jimmy Hoffa. That's a lot of stuff. Good morning. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Buffalino.
Thanks for having.
The story of your family has certainly been on movies, TV shows, in other books. Yours is so interesting because you are looking at it, but it's from this different perspective of the family.
Yeah, I'm cutting across. The original Buffalino family started here in Pittston in 1901 with my granduncle, who more or less assembled the troops. At the time, there was a massive strike in the coal region, and 30,000 people had vacated. So there was this enormous need for new workers, and Sicily offered up a great many of them. And a lot of them came through the padrone system, which was you'd be financed to come here, and then you'd pay back over time.
It was expensive, yeah. And people couldn't afford it. So you talk about that system, how they would be able to make the voyage here, but then, of course, you had to pay it back.
Right. And depending on where you were in the country and who was managing your system, some people were really being exploited. And that doesn't seem to be the case here with my granduncle, but he was in silent partnership with Russell's uncle. And Russell's uncle had a sort of a dubious pastime. He was a black-hander. And that involved extortion, etc. And he was in partnership with two other men who eventually formed the genesis of what you'd call the crime family that Russell later inherited.
It's interesting because when you talk about Russell Buffalino, you talk about him inheriting that position because of the fact that many other families didn't want their children to be in this, but he was an orphan.
Right. So Bill D'Elia, in his book, which came out a couple years ago, basically says the same thing. And that story rings true from my family's own recollection. His father was killed in a mine explosion that crippled my granduncle, and Russell was raised by his uncle.
So you're talking about your family, which you talk about as a younger person. You would hear about them, and you were told at times by someone who was a very much a motherly figure to many, it seems, in the family, that you were from the good part of the family?
Well, she was speaking of herself and her brothers and her family and mine as well. Basically, she was distinguishing herself from Russell. At the same time, she may have simply been following the party line, now that I think about it, because at the time the question in the Teamsters was, hey, what's Russell Buffalino's real relationship to Bill? Could have been a real problem if anybody understood the true nature of their relationship, because Bill was the second seat at the Teamsters, in a manner of speaking. So Bill ended up suing Time Magazine and others over making a familial connection between himself and Russell. And so Mary may simply have been following the party line to say that, no, we're not related, but he grew up here, meaning here at the house in Pittston.
Right.
With my father and his siblings and their cousins. There were like 20 people that Russell knew intimately well from being a local.
Right. Now, your dad was a photographer.
He was.
Right. So, and it's right. very interesting because you also talk about, he alludes to something that has obviously been talked about, J. Edgar Hoover, you know, for some time. He says something in there that you had heard, and it fits with a lot of what we had heard. And there's a lot of talk also about how there was criticism of him not going after the mafia, but, you know, he called it something different, so it didn't look like he was looking the other way. It's very interesting.
He did. He chose the term La Cosa Nostra, which may or may not be, you know, the actual term people wanted to use. The first time I read that he used that term was in relation to a wiretap. And two individuals were talking about this business arrangement of ours, this thing of ours. But there is a La Cosa Nostra in Italy, and he may have simply just chosen to use that term to get off the hook on the use of the mafia word.
Charles, it's interesting to hear your perspective as an adult looking back. I'm curious, at one point in your life, you were just little Charles Buffalino. And at some point, you realize, huh, my last name is different. It gets a different reaction from other people. Was there one moment where you're like, oh, no, or is there some?
No, there's this whole over string time? Of moments.
Okay.
Yeah. All the way up to now.
That's what's happening, right? Do you remember the first time when you were like, this is something's different here? I'm not like that Barsky kid who has nothing going on with his last name.
Well, yeah, you know, you just threw me a softball, and I'll take it, because Chucky Schimento, a friend of mine from school, it was at a time when Russell got caught up in a controversy over a truckload of stolen televisions, and Chucky came to me and said, hey, can you get me a color television? And I'm like, well, I mean, what do you mean? And I couldn't ask my father, because I knew, you know, my father worshipped Russell. All of his first-generation children were really big fans of Russell. If Russell smoked Chesterfield Kings, my father smoked Chesterfield Kings. It was like that.
Right.
So I knew I couldn't ask him. So I had to ask Mary. And
right.
She basically shrugged it off. And that's when she said, no, you know, his father was killed in a mine explosion, and he grew up here.
There was something that you mentioned later in the book, three reveals in the wake of your mother's death that led you to write the book. They were things that were revealed to you in the aftermath of her passing. What's that about?
Well, it's true. So at no time was I ever thinking, okay, we're going to set the record straight about this. That was really the farthest thing. And never was my intent to write a book about the family. However, at the time of my mother's passing, three things did happen in pretty short order. My attention was directed by this individual to a couple of cement artifacts that were on exhibit at his place of business. He said, you see those two nondescript-looking cement artifacts? I said, yeah. He said, yeah, Bill Buffalino gave those to me. He had a hobby of making those kind of things. And I'm like, really? Oh, sure. No, he didn't, because I knew Bill. But okay, that's really interesting. I walked away. Then Bill Buffalino's office in Pittston, which he had for a lot of reasons through the late 60s and early 70s, was on the downstairs of the other half of my house. And I cleaned it out and I put everything in storage. And one day I stumbled across a letter that was basically a draft of his letter to Hoffa, the letter where they parted ways. And that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that letter, it showed to you that was where there was a break between him and Hoffa.
Yeah, and a lot of people were breaking with Hoffa at that time because things were getting pretty hot for him with trials and whatnot, trial fixing. And he was bound to go to prison. And people were talking about a successor. And according to the FBI, an informant told them, look, just so you know, Bill Buffalino is being groomed for that spot. That never came to pass, and it's probably because Hoffa chose Frank Fitzsimmons to be his vice president in the election before he went away.
Right. So that's the two reveals.
Right. And then the third one was where I found a letter that basically said, hey, I made these two nondescript cement vases, and today they're at, you know, this location. I'm like, okay. I put that down. I'm like, do I know what? So it was Bill's brother that wrote that. Bill's brother had been with him through all the years in Detroit.
So again, we're not going to give away too much, but this all has to do with the big question a lot of people have.
You mean the Hoffa question?
Yes, the big question where, yes.
Oh, yeah, the where, right? So I should have mentioned that going into the 1, 2, 3 little reveals, I knew what everybody else knew at the time. I had read A Herd of Paint Houses, and I knew that Frank Sheeran had said, look, Hoffa was cremated. Okay. A lot of people agree with that assessment. Some people don't. There are probably like one of two good theories as to what happened. The one that his son embraces does end in Hoffa's cremation. So that's what I knew going in.
Right.
You know, 2 + 2 = 4. And now I've got this scenario in my head where could Hoffa really be in those? No, right?
Right.
So that's just not possible. And I can't be the one guy on Earth that knows that.
That's amazing.
This is not working out for me at all. So I've got to prove that can't be true. And it's possible it is not true.
But it's odd.
Plausibly true.
Don't we all have concrete things in our homes that might be...
you know? Oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's normal, right? Tupperware and concrete blocks that may have bodies in them. We don't know.
Right.
Common.
So, yeah. Why? So now, you know, it's bothering me enough that I find an article from, I think it was UCLA magazine from 1980-something. And they describe how the FBI visited this place called Central Sanitation in Detroit and were toured around the facility, especially the incinerator, by the attorney for the firm, Nick Miceli. Now, I'm reading this, trying to dispose of this crazy theory of mine, and I've run across Nick Miceli's name, and I'm like, Nicky? My Aunt Pauline's son? What's he doing in Detroit?
Wow.
Right? He's actually from California. There's more to that story.
It's really wild.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned some other books and obviously the movie. So what would you say when you say setting the record straight? What do you think might be some of the stuff that is mischaracterized?
Russell Bufalino lassoed a whirlwind and rode into northeastern Pennsylvania on a big blue ox with Joe Barbara to take over. That's nonsense. The notion that he came out of Buffalo, out of the Magadino organization, all of that is really, they were certainly involved with each other. Pittston and Buffalo were on either end of the Lehigh Valley Railroad line. They were connected by it. And there were a lot of Montedurese Sicilians in Buffalo, including, I think, Magadino. I may be wrong about that. But eventually, John Montana, who testified before the McClellan Committee, was the president of the Buffalo Montedoro Society. So a lot of relationships there, a lot of illegal liquor coming across the border from Buffalo, from Canada, at Buffalo, making its way down. So that's what that was all about. And John Montana was frequently in town here doing business related to his taxi and other companies. He was, in fact, on his way down here when he was stopped at Apalachin along with the rest.
Right. One of the things that you also talk about is the power that Russell Bufalino had. Did he have more power than the commission itself? I know that that is something some people have claimed.
You know, I don't know that. And I'm probably the wrong guy to ask that because I'm just related enough to Russell to think that's a lot of hooey. But then again, I have to admit that he had real reach. And why would that be true? So my grandfather and his brother occupied this house, and they had like in the teens of children themselves. And another family of Bufalinos related to us, they all went their separate ways after World War II. Some went to California, a lot went to Detroit. Most of Bill's siblings ended up there with him.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
And other places, let's just say. So he could call on people across the country to do non-lethal, you know, things. Hey, can you pick up this guy at the airport? Sure. You know, whatever. And they all could call on Russell and get whatever they needed, you know, in a material sense, in a family way. And he was always forthcoming with it. But it was more than that. Russell had business connections everywhere. So much of Detroit was my family.
Right.
In a way, especially Bill. You know, Bill had the catbird seat at the union. And Russell and Bill, their relationship was very tight. You know, in the movie, if you asked what kind of things would you correct, it's pretty commonly known that Bill and Russell were cousins. Well, Bill fought that notion in court and won. Won a settlement. But at the same time, he would tell you that Russell was his daughter's godfather. which was a special role among the Montedurese Sicilians. It really meant that his business is my business. Right. We're closer than brothers.
What's interesting also is you go into other characters on the periphery, but when you talk about your dad, you also talk, it's interesting when you talk about his watching what happened to JFK. Did he become somewhat obsessed with that?
Totally. Totally. He would never relax until the Zapruder film was released. I mean, it was like 15 years of...
He was a photographer, but he also, I mean, there was a comment, did he not, that was made when he saw the man accused, you know, get shot.
Oh, yeah,
himself.
He jumped right out of his chair. It took him like a sec. Well, he grew up on a street they used to call Murder Street, my father. And he knew the mechanics of assassination because most of the murders, you know, we're not talking about people deciding they wanted to kill you and killing you or crimes of passion or anything like that. There was a lot of union business, and a lot of it was assassinations. And the mechanics of that follow a specific pattern, and it was drilled in my father's head. He saw an assassination on our street at age 10.
That changes you, huh?
Oh, changed him.
Yeah.
And you said that he stood up in his chair. He thought that he was a pat.
No, he didn't stand up in the chair. Oh. Let's be clear.
Okay, no, he stood up.
He popped
up
out of the chair. Remember Chandler Bing from Friends?
Yes.
You know, he used to exit a chair like 3 feet above the seat. That's right. How he popped right
he popped up
out of
and what did he say?
Yeah. Before he fell back down, he said, "Oh, my God, he's the patsy."
Wow.
So...
And
talking about Oswald. So we were watching Oswald, you know, being shot on live television.
Wasn't he trying to call the White House to talk to them about this?
Sure, he did that a couple of times. Wow. Yeah, that was entertaining. Well, he just wanted to ask LBJ why he shot Kennedy. I mean,
because he thought it was an inside job.
Yeah, pretty sure.
It's one of those skill sets you get when you grow up on Murder Street.
Right. I mean, you did talk about, I mean, it was a violent time. Wow. It was a violent time back then.
Well, everybody was bombing everybody. So right, the unions were bombing the owners of the mines, the people who were running the mines, basically, who themselves were, in at least three cases, convicted and imprisoned black handers who came out to become coal contractors. So the unions were bombing them. They were bombing the unions. The black hand was extorting people by dynamiting their porches. It was a madhouse here in Pittston for 20 years or so.
When you look back at like your family or Russell Bufalino as a whole, the man, the myth, the legend, so many times the story has been told. Do you think it's been underplayed, exaggerated, or is it just about right? Or are you still unsure what the answer is to that? Because so many times the story has been told. When you look back at Russell Bufalino, the man, the myth, the legend, do you think it's been underplayed, exaggerated, or is it just about right? Or are you still unsure what the answer is to that?
Because I'm still unsure. I'm as unsure as everybody else.
Wow. All
but
right.
Who's who in the zoo? You know, what was Russell's real role with respect to the commission? I tend to think of the Wyoming Valley as an autonomous region, right?
Right.
Certainly connected to everybody else. Stronger ties to the Genovese family, going back very far to its genesis, but more or less left alone. Influential in that they could reach into all of those other organizations, and because he had the respect of all of them. So, yeah.
I have to think when I look back at my childhood and the people in it, and as you get older and you start to hear things or you see things differently, for you, you go into detail about these cousins and other people that were in your life, and you're starting to realize that it may not have been as innocent as maybe you thought it was. I can imagine the mysteries that you're trying to uncover.
Let me answer that by saying all of the first generation children, my father's generation, of the five original Bufalino men, none of them ever really had serious involvement in anything. And in this generation, you know, it's all over. There's nothing going on. But one or two of Salvatore's children, including Bill and his brother Yabo, had a larger role than the rest of them. And Yabo was Bill's brother, went to Detroit with him, along with a third brother, and were affiliated with the wrong people out there. Yabo was the kind of guy you would look at and say, I really don't want to meet him in an alley. But he was very much not somebody that wanted to hurt you. He was quite the opposite.
It seemed like you had a lot of affection and care, right? And it was someone that you feel was a much more complicated character than you knew when you were younger.
Yeah, for sure. Again, he was not somebody that talked about. He lived here next door as my neighbor for 12 years or something like that. after Bill retired. He just basically returned to the homestead and was my neighbor, and we didn't talk about anything having to do with anything, although occasionally he'd blurt something out about his youth in the 20s. He was coming of age during Prohibition. So he certainly drove a truck of something. Fact. So that was, and that was accepted, but he had, I think he had major moral difficulties with doing anything more than that. So
yeah,
he was just this very different guy. Have you ever seen the movie Unstrung Heroes? John Turturro, Michael Richards, they were all sort of a little bit off, right? So Yabba was my unstrung hero, and he was the last of his generation to live in the building. So he meant a lot to me just to have as a reference to a time when things were a lot different.
Right, a connection to that. Yeah. You talk about now it's no more. It obviously was a big thing at one time. Is it okay to talk about it? Do you still need to talk to people in the family and say, is it okay if I do this? Did you find that you had to say some things and not say other things because of just family and connection still?
Well, no, I'm not very careful in that way. I have asked people to use stories that they've quoted to me and got their clearance. But no, I didn't feel it necessary to ask for permission of anyone. So it's probably going to come back at me, but you never know.
You talk about the family being across the country. I'm sure some of them probably changed their name, right?
Well, there are Irish names in our family now. It's been a long time. It's 100 okay. years ago.
My question is, like, do you ever think, boy, my life would be different if we had changed our name? And if you could go back, would you want that alternate timeline? Or you love where you're at with this?
It's a little like being Shrek. No, I'm not a big guy, and I'm not a gangster.
Right.
But Cutson is my own private Idaho. In a way, I can go walk up my street, and it seems like people are pulling their kids off the street because there's nobody on the street when I go. And I kind of like it.
But deep down.
I find it interesting that you talked about how you were waiting for a time when it wouldn't be in the news or talked about, and now you have a book. So you are talking about it yourself. What are you hoping that this book does?
I think I've said that I felt like I had to write it out of some kind of a moral obligation, just on the 60% chance that I'm that my intuition is right about this. Again, that's the one and only reason. Because
so, write about the mystery, right? Write about the mystery and the question that is asked, and that is about Jimmy Hoffa and his final place.
Yeah, that's the driver. So I sat on it for 15 years. So I made the discovery in 2011. Did a lot of research, satisfied myself that I couldn't disprove my theory. So what am I going to do with this? Ruminated on that for about seven years, and then just decided I'm a lot closer to 70 than I am to 50. At this time, there's nobody in my family who could even follow all of the parties that I name in the book, or have any reference to them.
Is there any way to prove what you believe? Because those items, could they possibly be tested? I don't even know if it's possible today.
I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know that. And, you know, so the FBI is welcome. I mean, there's nothing that I have that they can't have related to this. But for them to show up at my door, they've got to first embrace a theory they dismissed a long time ago. Not dismissed, but they couldn't get satisfaction on the cremation theory.
Is it true that if there was a definitive answer, we wake up tomorrow and, like, Jimmy Hoffa's body was found here, and does this story end, and does your name right now with that question open-ended, the Buffalino name will stay alive forever?
Yeah, I think it will. And that's got more to do with what Russell did than anything I did.
Well, I'm just asking, like, if that question finally gets answered definitively.
And I think that it still stands up in history, local history, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it's legitimate labor history. It's legitimate, if you want to say, mafia history. It's legitimate history of Pittston. It's kind of all shoehorned in there. And I tried to thread it together as best I could to show a continuum and the overlapping motivations of the players.
And you do a good job of that. Well, you did a good job of weaving in the history of the area, also the issues that led to what it all was about, the characters. And again, as I say, it's like looking at what we've heard elsewhere, but looking at it just at a slightly different angle and perspective. I just have one last question for you, though. These ceramic objects, where are they today?
Well, they're in Pittston, of course. No, you know, somebody's family is involved, and I don't want to name them. Again, the FBI shows up and says, all right, Charlie, where are these things? That's a different matter, but I'm going to leave that a little closed question for now.
It's very interesting.
People in my family know that answer. Let's put it that way.
Right. And if you'd like to text in and tell us what that is, I want no part of that.
No. Charles Buffalino, right. The book is Revelations of a Mafia Family, The Teamsters, and the Final Resting Place of Jimmy Hoffa. So this book is available for people to get. Of course, it's at Amazon and anywhere else where you get your books, right?
Yes, it is.
And hopefully it will stir more discussion. I don't know. You just felt like you needed to get what you had to say out. Like you said, you want that out there. And if someone wants to follow up at the FBI, they're more than welcome to call, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Congratulations. I mean, your life's work. You're born into it. And you finally get around to doing it. And I don't know if you know this. We're Facebook friends. I saw you were in New York recording the audiobook. This job is not that easy, right? Don't answer that, Charles.
I'm a recovering broadcaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You and I actually had this discussion once before. You may not remember. It's a long time ago.
I think you told me you'll forget this conversation. Never happened. You told me. No, you didn't. You did not.
All right. So the book is available. We really enjoyed having this time to talk to you about it. We wish you the best. And hopefully this is a big seller.
You.
Because there's a lot of interest in this. There's a lot of interest in this still today. Charles, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks again.
All righty. Take care.
Coming up next on Special Edition, I'll be speaking with Marie Onakevich from NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Health, about National Mental Health Month in May. And Froggy 101's Doc and Chew.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
We speak with Wilkes-Barre Mayor George Brown about upcoming events in the Diamond City. It's all coming up when Special Edition continues.
Edition. I'm Brian Hughes. My guest this morning is Marie Onakevich, here from NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, here to talk about the month of May, which is National Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes,
good morning, Marie.
Good morning. Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, it's great to have you on the program. I was at a Knights of Columbus event. It was like a community dinner, and there was someone from your organization that had some literature out, and I was just kind of wanted to connect with you and see what you folks were all about.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate the follow-up on that. We are a NAMI Northeast Region, which means we're an affiliate of a national organization. There's affiliates like us doing similar work across the country. Our mission is to help to build better lives for anybody who's been impacted by mental illness. And we do that by offering support groups for individuals with mental illness. We have support groups for family members of people with mental illness. We have education programs for those same folks, you know, persons with mental illness, our peer-to-peer program. We have a family-to-family program, which teaches family members all about mental illness and how to support their loved one in recovery. We also have education programs that we offer in the community. We offer mental health first aid. We offer something called QPR, which is a suicide prevention training. And we do this, again, with that mission of helping folks build better lives.
Mental illness was always something that was kind of a taboo. You just didn't want to talk about it. You pretend it's not there and it'll go away kind of situation. People, I would hope in 2026, more accepting of the situation that, I may have a family that family member that that has mental illness, and what can we do about it?
That's you're so right. The stigma is, it's still pretty powerful, although NAMI, almost everything that we do, what makes us stand apart from some of the other mental health focused organizations is almost everything is peer led. So the folks leading those support groups, leading those education programs that I mentioned, participating in awareness events as which is, I believe, what you were at with the Knights of Columbus, they're all folks with some kind of lived experience. Either they have their own mental illness or they're family members of people with mental illness. And at NAMI, we believe that when we speak out, when we share our story, when we don't allow the stigma to stop us, we're encouraging and inspiring other folks that to not let that stigma keep them down.
Now, is mental illness, the specter of mental illness, is it more widespread than in the past, or is it just more people are aware of what's happening rather than not aware of it?
I think more people are aware of it. Diagnosis has gotten better as the stigma and shame has lessened. People are more likely to be diagnosed and to accept that they do have a mental health problem and seek help for it. The numbers they've remained pretty steady. You know, at NAMI, we talk about 1 in 5 people have been impacted by mental illness, 1 in 20 people by serious mental illness. And that's been pretty steady for my whole career with NAMI.
How long has NAMI been around?
NAMI has been around for over 40 years. NAMI started around a kitchen table in Minnesota. A few moms, because it's always the moms who make things happen for their children, a few moms of persons with mental illness said, you know, after getting some help and treatment for their adult children, they said, well, what about us? We need some help. We need some support. We need some education and knowledge so that we can continue to support our loved one while also taking care of ourselves. And NAMI was formed, and since then it's grown to become an organization with hundreds of affiliates across the country.
This is Special Edition. I'm Brian Hughes. My guest is Marie Onakevich from NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Health, the Northeast region here in Pennsylvania. How many areas do you cover in Northeast? Are you pretty much the entire part of Northeast PA?
We are in Lackawanna, Susquehanna, and Wayne County.
Okay.
Where we chose the name of Northeast Region. Typically, NAMIs, their names include the county that they represent. And
right.
Since we represent, you know, Lackawanna's kind of big, Susquehanna's county big, we didn't want an overly cumbersome name. So we're NAMI Northeast Region. There is a NAMI affiliate that's just about to relaunch in Luzerne, Wyoming County.
Okay.
And there is some folks in Carbon Monroe Pike who worked with us for many years, and they're about to launch an affiliate there.
Now, what type of events do you have scheduled for the month of May?
Our biggest event is, it's called the Holly Spring Run. That's on May 23rd in Holly. It's a timed 5K, but it's also a fun run, and we will have an information fair there. So we're the point of this event is to, again, raise awareness about mental health, raise awareness about mental illness, let folks know that they're not alone. It was originally started by a family who lost their son to suicide, and they created this, they started this run in memory of him, a young man named Tyler Whitman. And after doing it for 10 years, they felt it was time for them to move on, ask NAMI to take on.
Right.
And we have done so. This will be our fourth year. So we try to be sure to recognize those folks who we've lost to suicide, while also recognizing folks who have perhaps survived some struggles with suicidal thoughts. Letting people know that, again, they're not alone, which is a very important message of NAMI. So at this event, they'll see the resources that are available in the community. They'll see folks who have had similar struggles to them.
Yeah, because a lot of people, when they're in a situation like that with a family member, they probably feel like they're the only one that has to deal with this, and it's not exactly the case, is it?
You're right. They feelings of isolation because of the symptoms of mental illness. They're so you know, can be so intense. They cause a lot of withdrawal. Those feelings of isolation. There's the shame and there's the discrimination and all of the things that go along with it. And so we again, through our folks with their own lived experience, we really want people to know that they're not alone.
Marie, how can we get a hold of NAMI and its services?
Sure. You can find us on social media. We're on Facebook and on Instagram. And that's, you know, the most up-to-date activities that we have going on. And that's just NAMI, N-E-P-A, so N-A-M-I, N-E-P-A. Our website is NAMINEPA.org. And our phone number is 570-342-1047.
Okay. Marie, anything else you'd like to discuss regarding NAMI or mental illness that we have not already brought up?
Sure. Our second, in addition to that Holly Spring run, we have once again partnered with Black and Brass Coffee Company. They created a coffee blend for us, and it's stigma-free coffee is what we call it. No preservatives, no additives, no stigma. They created this for NAMI, so during the month of May, in their shops, they will have this coffee available. They have a shop in, they have a cafe in Honesdale, and then they have a cafe in Scranton, so the stigma-free coffee will be available there. It will also be available through NAMI, our board, and our staff for sale. So again, that number, 570-342-1047, if anybody's interested in this coffee. And we'll offer that throughout the month of May just to be able to raise awareness.
Okay, Marie Anikevich from NAMI Northeast Region, Pennsylvania, talking about the month of May, National Mental Health Awareness Month, and all the great things your organization does. Just want to bring some awareness to the rest of the folks that you're out there. And if people need you, you're just a click away or a phone call away. And I appreciate you coming in and sharing your information with us here on Special Edition.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Brian.
Mayor George Brown is with us. There are so many cool things going on in Wilkes-Barre. Let's talk about the concerts. You've got, tell us about Lady A and En Vogue.
Well, I have to tell you, Doc and Chewy, we are so honored to have one of the five cities that was designated by the mayor. Or I'm sorry, I'm the mayor. Yeah. By the governor and Cassandra Coleman, who's a great, great person, really promoting Wilkes-Barre. So we have the concert. It's going to be on June 20th at beautiful Kirby Park, a 52-acre park in Wilkes-Barre. Lady A, the headliner, and then En Vogue will be playing also.
So cool.
Now, it's a free show, but you need to go online and get tickets, right? Because they want to...
Go to America 250, mm-hmm. and you'll see a place that you can log on for tickets. You have to have tickets. You will not get in unless you have tickets. And they'll be put on your phone. So when you go there, you just show the phone, and you'll see that they'll see the tickets. But you can get two adults and two children.
Awesome.
All right, so
and you're not good. Allowed to beat the children in bowling, no, is what
no,
I'm learning.
No, you're not allowed to do that at all. Fine Arts Fiesta is coming up in May. Talk about that a little bit. That's got a lot of stuff going on there.
This is the 70th year for the Fine Arts Fiesta, and it's every year it's downtown Wilkes-Barre in Public Square Park. Mm-hmm. And every year it's artists that are there, and they show their wares. They come from all over the country for the Fine Arts Fiesta. I've talked to people from Tennessee and just different parts of the country. They say every year we come here, Mayor, because it's one of the best shows that we can come and show our renderings. And it's just a great time, a lot of food, a lot of entertainment.
Music, yeah.
Music, oh yeah. So it's a great time. So I asked the people to please come on out, okay? And you will not be disappointed.
I've done it many years. You know, and each year it does get a little bit bigger, but it is. And, you know, parts of it are covered because some of the paintings and pictures are in certain tents and things like that. But it's a great family event to go to. And I bet the businesses love it down there because people are hanging out, right? Tell us about the Dire Straits event that's coming up.
Sure. August 14th is our fourth free concert on Public Square.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we have Dire Straits Legacy. And Dire Straits Legacy is members of the original Dire Straits band when Mark Knopfler played with them.
Yeah.
He doesn't play with them any longer, but the person that took his place since 2007 has been touring with them. And you close your eyes, Doc, and you're listening to Mark Knopfler.
Yeah.
But they've been playing in Europe for several years and are finally coming back, to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be Wilkes-Barre is where they're going to start, and they're going to anchor that Wilkes-Barre and then have other concerts around the city of Wilkes-Barre. So we're really excited to have them. Dire Straits Legacy, folks. It's going to be on August 14th. And it's on a Friday night, and it's going to be on Public Square. Come on out, get something to eat. But you know, the nice thing is we get 6,000 to 7,000 people. that are at the concerts. This is our fourth one.
Yeah. Each one gets a little bit bigger than the previous,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Last year we had John Oates of Hall & Oates.
We remember because we were playing a game here with you trying to figure out who was going to be there. And we were wrong.
Yeah. I've been wrong. I'm like I'm 0-4.
Yeah. At this point. But that is cool. And then so you probably start as soon as this one's done. The planning probably begins for the following year, right?
We start in January.
Yeah.
And people go down to Nashville and they see who's available. You know, for the time frame in August that we need. But with Dire Straits, we actually reached out to them in England and we said, look, what's available? When are you going to be available to play? And they said, well, you know what? We will come to Wilkes-Barre and we'll play. So they worked it into their schedule. So they're playing Europe now. I think they're in Poland now, but they're all over Europe playing.
That's awesome.
So they work all the kinks out, if you will. And then by the time they hit us, they're ready to go, right?
I'm looking forward to it.
Looking forward to warming up. What about playgrounds? What else is going on? Any more working on playgrounds?
Sure. Well, last year we opened up our third special needs playground at the Bog, which is off of East Main Street in Wilkes-Barre. It's a beautiful playground that we put in for special needs children that play at Challenger Baseball.
Right.
And I promised them 2 years ago they were going to have the next park, and they do now.
Yeah.
So they have a beautiful park. We also added six pickleball courts to the Bog.
Isn't that amazing how big
pickleball
has become?
Do you play pickleball, Mayor?
No, Chewy, but I would challenge you to pickleball.
So wait, we got bowling? This is going to be like the Olympics.
You're challenging me I don't play pickleball, so we might not be doing good.
I want to play
That's it. Okay, Mayor Brown just wants to take me on in every sport.
Yeah.
That's all right. Pickleball and bowling. We'll get
pickleball
it going.
Pickleball bowling.
Tell Tyler, get the schedule. Get it on the schedule.
I think Tyler's wrestling. Probably listening.
Yeah, Tyler, put it on the schedule. Bowling and on his home turf too. Put that at the Bog as well.
So now we have eight pickleball courts. We're going to build six more.
Wow.
So 14 in the city of Wilkes-Barre.
Wow.
And people come from Scranton and all over to play pickleball in Wilkes-Barre because they don't have many up in the Scranton area.
Oh, well, there you go. You're bringing them in. That's what you're doing. Yeah.
The nod. I like the little nod.
Yeah, the little nod. The eyes getting real wide.
Well, I mean, that's it. I got to say, Mayor Brown, like, everything you're doing in Wilkes-Barre is really awesome. And the stuff you're doing, we really appreciate it. And how great the city's becoming. It really is. It's awesome.
Well, it's the team I have.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, Chewy. I have a great team. And for the last 7 years, they've stuck with me.
Yeah.
obviously you're doing this.
Stick with me. Yeah, you're doing it right.
I'm not easy to work for. But they're great people. And whatever we do, I don't take the credit for it. It's our team.
Yeah.
Just like the special needs playgrounds, it's the team that works at Wilkes-Barre City, but also our special needs playground committee. And these are people that have special needs children and their families,
right.
or they work in that type of an environment. So they are dedicated. They'll do purse bingo and sell hot dogs and sell candy bars just to raise money to build these parks.
Which helps, yeah. It really does. And Mayor Brown, thank you so much for coming in again.
Hey, this is just amazing for me. I think it's the fourth or fifth time.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, I don't want to hurt your ratings when I'm here, but I love coming in and just spending some time with you guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Mayor Brown.
Anytime.
Next up on Special Edition, I'll speak with Taryn Talaka from the Wyoming Free Library about their Beer for Books fundraiser coming up on May 29th. And I'll speak with Margot Azzarelli about a redemption of the Edgar Allan Poe play Fall of the House of Usher, playing this and next weekend at Actor's Circle in Scranton. It's all coming up when Special Edition continues. This is Special Edition. I'm Brian Hughes. My guest is Taryn Talaka. She's on the board of directors of the Wyoming Free Library, and they're having a big beer and books fundraiser. Taryn, tell us all about it.
Yeah, so we have our upcoming Beer for Books event. It's going to be on Friday, May 29th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Lighthouse Inn. This is one of our biggest fundraisers taking place in Wyoming. We're super excited. We always have a great time every year. We have live entertainment from John and Kate, basket raffles. We have a 50-50 raffle, and then each ticket includes a buffet of food and two drink tickets.
You can't go wrong with beer and books on a Friday. Am I right?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
And is this the first time you've done this type of event, or is this a kind of an annual tradition at the Wyoming Free Library?
This has become a tradition. This is actually, we're probably nearing our 10th year, and it's been really successful for us. It's a great time. Tickets are also $30 per person, so when you think about going out, grabbing a few drinks, getting dinner, you're probably saving a little bit of money coming to our event too, just for a fun date night or a night out with friends. And of course, Young Eye, you're supporting a great cause. Like I said, this is several years in the making. We've had such great success at this event. A lot of people leave with smiles on their faces and, of course, raffle baskets in their arms. So we love seeing the community come out and support us.
So bring some money, not just for the beer and the books, but, you know, for the little other things too.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we do so much to support the community. We're actually the smallest library in the Luzerne County Library System. So events like this are so significant. Money from it goes toward our programming. We offer programming for both children and adults. We also have a community food pantry. We have a seed garden. We have so much going on. And the money that comes in from this really supports us a lot. So we're so grateful to everyone who stopped by.
This is Special Edition here with Taryn Talaka from the Board of Directors of the Wyoming Free Library. You got a big event coming toward the end of May, Friday, May 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. It's the Beer and Books Fundraiser. Now, whose idea was it to do a Beer and Books Fundraiser?
Oh, you know what? That's a good question. I have to say, this event was created before me. So it was probably our board that was like, you know what? Hey, what makes a better night than going out, having a few drinks, supporting a great community treasure? And people, too, you know, you can get your tickets either online at beerforbooks.com or at the library. So there are many ways to get your tickets for this event. But that's a great question, who actually came up with it. I don't know their name, but I appreciate them. This is a fun event.
It sounds like it, that's for sure. How long has the Wyoming Free Library been open?
So the Wyoming Free Library actually is going to be celebrating its 100th anniversary in the year 2027, so next year. So this is our Beer for Books that's leading up to that. And as a great segue into that, we'll have a lot of really fun 100th anniversary events coming up, including Beer for Books in 2027 as well.
That's terrific. Anything else you want to tell us about either the event or the Wyoming Free Library? Sounds like you're doing a lot of great things there.
Yeah, you know what? I think you hit upon all of the great points. Again, I just really want to emphasize the money that we make from this goes toward all of our programming, and you're helping to support the smallest library in the Luzerne County Library System. So we appreciate every ticket sold and everyone who shows up to support us.
Well, you know, if you really be a big success here, you won't be the smallest library in Luzerne County much longer.
Absolutely. It's honestly, and actually last year was our biggest success that we've seen. We had about 100 people show, so we're hoping to get that same crowd again. It's always been a successful event for us.
You have a specific goal in mind, or is it just $1 more than last year?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'd love to see us hit that same amount this year, but we'd love to make it bigger and better every year. We've made some improvements from last year, too, so if we can make it even bigger than last year, that would be ideal.
Okay. Taryn Talaka from the Board of Directors of the Wyoming Free Library, the smallest library in Luzerne County, but for how much longer? It's anybody's guess. It's the Beer and Books Fundraiser, Friday, May 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. Taryn, I appreciate you joining us here on Special Edition. Best of luck and have a really big event.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
This is Special Edition. I'm Brian Hughes. My guest this morning is Margot Azzarelli, here to discuss a play that she's in with Actors Circle. Good morning, Margot.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, tell me about this play.
The play was actually written by me and my daughter, Marnie. It's an original adaptation of Edgar Allan's Poe, Fall of the House of Usher.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of been a labor of love doing it. But we're fascinated with Poe, and my late husband, he used to be a Poe, I guess, impersonator. He'd go around to libraries and historical societies, and, I mean, he had the Raven memorize all of it. And so we're kind of doing this in memory of him.
That's awesome. The only part I can remember is, quote the Raven, nevermore. That's best I could do.
I kind of missed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what got him interested in Edgar Allan Poe?
Well, basically, I like all things gothic. So I liked Edgar Allan Poe when I was in high school because we read The Raven there. But the big Poe fans are my daughter and my late husband.
Okay.
Big Poe fans. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's one of those plays that kind of sticks with you.
Yes, it is. Yes. And he just had a, especially for the time period, he just had a strange imagination, which I like.
Yeah. This is Special Edition, here with Margo Azzarelli, talking about a play she's doing for Actors Circle, a remaking or revisioning of a great Edgar Allan Poe play.
What's the Fall of the House of Usher?
Fall of the House of Usher. Okay. My bad. So when is this play running?
It runs this weekend, April 30th, May 1st, and 2nd. And then next weekend, Friday and Saturday, 9th at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
And then on the Sunday matinees, which is the 3rd and the 10th, which is Mother's Day as well, it runs at 2 p.m. And we are doing a Mother's Day special on the 10th. Any mother can come in for $10 admission. So that's like you're saving $5 off the admission.
That's great.
So we want to appreciate our mothers. So.
And maybe if you wear a Baltimore Raven jersey, you might get a little off of that.
Yeah. we're hoping, people come out and see it, and we're hoping that they'll enjoy our little twist on it, a little modern day twist.
Okay. And where can we get tickets?
Tickets you can get at Actors Circle. You can give them a call. You can call and make your reservations there. Or you can visit actorscirclescranton.com/tickets and get them right online.
All right. Terrific. Once again, Fall of the House of Usher, Margo style. Happening at Actors Circle this weekend and again next weekend, special for Mother's Day. And anything else you want to tell us about the play?
No, not really. Just come out and enjoy yourself. And it's scary, but fun, kind of funny at the same time. So
I love scary funny.
That's what it is.
Well, I just want to put out a shout out to the fellow that got us together, Mr. Bernie Ott.
Person in the whole world. Yes, I love Bernie.
All right.
He's a producer, so he's been helping a lot. So yes,
it's a good PR guy too.
Yeah.
All right, Margo Azzarelli here to talk about the Fall of the House of Usher, a remaking, renewed version of the play that's happening this weekend and again next weekend at Actors Circle in Scranton. I appreciate you joining us, sharing this with us here on Special Edition. Thank you for joining us this week on Special Edition. Special Edition is a weekly public affairs presentation of Odyssey Wilkes-Barre. I'm Brian Hughes. Thanks again for listening.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.